And a very good morning to you, or good afternoon if you're listening to a replay of this show, because I can assure you this program is going to be so good it will be worth replaying multiple times. Of course, I'm speaking about the program that I call a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Adam being myself, Adam Lepp, computer guy, webmaster, and multiple other things that I do at this broadcasting enterprise that we call WWGH Radio. My master of the microphone, brother in broadcasting, and most importantly, partner in crime, is on the line with me currently, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman. Otherwise, sometimes
good morning.
Good morning, Ron. Of course, we sometimes politically correcticize, if that's a word, his name, and change it to Ronald Fine Person, because he is one of the finest persons you're going to meet when it comes to discussing politics, history, what I have anointed as presidentology, and all the mudslinging which we are already seeing as we approach the early November election. Well, you know, Ron, first of all, thank you again for joining us as we are in that time between Groundhog Day and Valentine's Day, President's Day coming up, daylight savings time coming back, all kinds of good things as we transition into the late winter. Of course, in Florida, it's really never winter, but here in Ohio, we get the four enjoyable seasons. I did have an agenda, Ron, because there are so many different things to talk about today, but you know what? For some reason, I got nancified. That's a new word also called nancified, and I tore up my agenda. I just tore it up, and I threw it on the table. I was kind of a naughty boy, wasn't I?
It's funny. Nancy really made quite a stir when she ripped up the State of the Union speech after Trump gave it, yes.
It was quite a spectacle. You know, I saw that on the air, and I said, are my eyes deceiving me? How could someone actually tear up a document, which kind of looked like it was important? And was she doing it just for the show, just to have people talk about it ad nauseum like they're doing? Or did she maybe need some scrap paper? Maybe she didn't want to put it in the shredder. Or for some reason, she felt like it was the right thing to do. And again, it has caused me to yet again coin a word for the English language. Now, Ron has submitted the word presidentologist to Merriam-Webster Dictionary. We might see a new word added.
Oxford English Dictionary Oxford. Is where I sent it. Oxford English.
Well, close enough.
I think that's more authoritative, I think.
I knew it was one of those. Submitted my word presidentologist, which I have coined. But I'm going to coin another word, which, again, I just mentioned, nancified. And nancified means that you tore up something which was important. Now, if you were to submit the word nancify or nancified or nancification to the Oxford Dictionary, do you think that they would laugh at you, or would they think, well, maybe that is a word that we should add? Or would it be maybe unfair to other women named Nancy? Nancy McCune, for example, sister of the relatively young actor who just passed away, Philip McCune.
How about Nancy Reagan?
Yeah, well, Nancy.
The first lady.
Actually, it can be pronounced McEwen or McKeon. I've actually heard both pronunciations, but Nancy McEwen or Nancy McKeon, who played the lovely Joe Poliachek on The Facts of Life, would it be unfair to her? Would it be unfair to the late Nancy Reagan, who, of course, was politically quite different from Nancy Pelosi, maybe to the Nancy Drew books? You know, has Nancy Pelosi kind of an infamy situated the name Nancy among women?
Big a deal. Honestly, I think it's ridiculous. I don't know if I would have done what she did, but I think Trump's speech, which was full of lies, was much more outrageous than the fact that she ripped it up. It's still copies of it available. There's no such thing as an official copy. Another official copy can be made. And I have one person online on Facebook that keeps on harping on it, who is a Democrat, and I say, you're ridiculous, because this is not important in the whole scheme of things. It's important to point out the shortcomings of Trump, and I give Nancy credit, even though I wouldn't have done myself, but I still would give a credit.
My main comment, regardless of how I personally feel about her or Trump or the contents of the speech, is that it was unprofessional and uncalled for. And
it's
very
unprofessional every day, though. What's new about that?
Very childish. And Here's one thing I think you would all agree.
He's toddler, you know.
It's right, and you just said it. It sinks to his level, because that's the kind of thing that Donald would do. He would rip up a speech. They're comparing it, saying, well, Donald made fun of a handicapped reporter and has done all these things that are mean, and I agree, he has. He is an objectionable person. And even people that like him mention that, but sometimes they say that his being objectionable is one of the things that they like. But this speech ripping, that's the kind of thing that Donald would do. She has sunk to his level. And is that what she wants to be known as? And
Look, he sunk down to the level. He didn't shake a hand when he was giving her the copy of the speech. So I think that was unprofessional. He started it. And he has done so much damage to the public reputation of the United States. And I think she's just trying to make it clear. And I think if she was a man, they wouldn't make as big a deal. I think it's also the fact that she's a powerful woman, the most powerful woman in U.S. history. And that's why the right wing's going after her. I think it's ridiculous.
So this Nancification will go down.
Be a word.
In history, well, that's a new word that I've invented because, you know,
I don't think it'll be accepted as a word if it was submitted. I don't plan to submit it. You can go ahead and do it.
Maybe we should just use your last name, maybe Pelosified. That's kind of better, I think. So we'll just change that to Pelosi.
Well, at least that's unique.
Because Pelosi is not a very common name. So she has Pelosified the speech, Pelosification, tearing up an important document. And, you know, I could have just torn, you know, just tear it up, you know, tear it up. Yeah, tear it up. Rip it up, you know. You can hear on the sound effects, I'm tearing up something. This is just a scrap piece of paper, but those are sound effects. If you ever look up the word, which I'm going to change to Pelosification, that is what you are likely to refer to. So anyway, as we start out the show, Ron, as we often do, on a humorous, sarcastic, if not completely crazy note, let's get down to business. And thankfully, I did make a Xerox copy of the itinerary for today. We've already covered the Pelosification of said speech. Let's go to the primary. Now, it looks like at airtime, the primary has been decided, and it is razor-thin margin. It appears that the person formerly known as Mayor Pete, we can now call him Possible President Pete. How about that one? Possible President Pete has beaten out the combless commie, that's my nickname, for Bernard Sanders, and presidential possibility Pete has gained the victory in the great state of Iowa. Now, as we talked
to be specific, Bernie won the popular vote, it seems, but he gained Pete the delegate vote, and of course it's being compared to the Electoral College argument. But if you go by popular vote, it seems like Bernie did win by a small margin, but Pete won the delegate count, which it's the whole idea of caucuses, as I wrote this week, is preposterous. So they should not exist because, first of all, they promote extremism. I think primaries are the only way to go, and I think there should either be a national primary day or four regional primary days, with each 4 years a different region starting it off, second, third, fourth, not in the same order every 4 years. But I think that the caucus idea is not a very good idea at all.
It kind of sounds like the Hillary versus Donald election. There was the popular vote winner and the actual winner. Bottom line, it was extremely close, and they are very different candidates. Start with the fact that Pete always has.
I pointed out on my blog is that one is, at the time of the inauguration, would be 39, the youngest, and Sanders would be actually 79 in 4 months, the oldest, exactly double the age. One is Jewish, but not religious, and is a, quote, socialist, end quote, more like Scandinavian socialist, not a communist, even though you say that. And the other one is more moderate and is born Catholic and became Episcopalian and goes to church when he's home in South Bend and is gay. So, my gosh, what a difference. And then we have Michael Bloomberg, who's the other one that I think is most gained by all this. And he's Jewish, not particularly religious, but he's from New York City, where Bernie grew up before he went to Vermont. So we actually have, in theory, two Jews and a gay man as the finalists, most likely, it seems.
Don't forget to mention that Pete always has nicely coiffed hair. And Mr. Sanders, I don't think he owns a comb. But doesn't matter.
Yeah, and by the way, in the case of Bloomberg, he's born only 5 months after Bernie, so there's only a 5 month younger difference between him and Bernie. And then Joe is November after Bloomberg, so they're all within a year, 2 months of each other. All within 80 in office. While in the case of Sanders, not Sanders, in the case of Pete, he would leave office at just actually younger than the age of John F. Kennedy, but older than Teddy Roosevelt after 4 years. He only had one term. All fascinating, you know, unbelievable situations.
Yeah, bottom line is, very different candidates. Hair jokes aside, Bernie is literally more, at this point, it'll change as they get older, but Bernie is literally more than twice as old as Mr. Buttigieg. Religiously, kind of different. Bernie has a wife. Don't really hear much about her, but I do believe he is betrothed. I think that's the word, to a female. Bernie is betrothed.
His wife, controversial. She ran a college that went bankrupt, and there's been talk about her spending money and how she deals with money. So I think his wife could be a problem for him in the campaign.
Actually, betrothed is one who's engaged. Well, they were engaged first, so close enough. Anyway.
And of course, Sam, I want to point out, they got married and then went to the Soviet Union in 1989 for their honeymoon, which is coming back to cause him trouble, even though that was, of course, Gorbachev's Russia, not Stalin or Brezhnev. It was a different time, but right before the Soviet downfall with Gorbachev.
And Pete is married to Chastin Buttigieg, who was formerly known as Chastin Glezman. And on a previous show, Ron, I invented a word for the equivalent of, it's kind of hard to explain, a man who marries another man but takes his husband's last name. You wouldn't really call his former last name a maiden name, so I invented the term stud surname, which is another word, another atomism. So, Chastin Buttigieg, yeah. Who's stud surname.
He's a middle school teacher, and he'd be the third youngest partner, you know, actually a month younger than Jacqueline Kennedy, and about nine years younger than Francis Cleveland, married to Grover Cleveland.
And his stud surname, which is a word that I've coined, of
stud
Glezman.
Surname, I like that.
Or possibly, you like that word, stud surname.
I think it's funny, yes.
Or maybe
that
should
be a new name.
We should go Chastin
Glezperson. A stud surname. Maybe that could be put in the dictionary.
Right. So of my three atomisms of recent shows, you like stud surname. You, of course, like presidentologist, but you really don't like Pelosified, which I previously called
Nancified. Well, Nancification. No, not really.
Yeah.
Not Nancy, for sure, because Nancy's too nice a name. The last name is a different story, possibly, but not Nancy. You don't want to do that to Nancy's around the country.
Pelosification, well, maybe put that on hold, but it's still kind of a cute name. Again, Pelosification refers to the ripping up of an important document and causing a large amount of controversy. In case you wondered what Pelosification was, that's a new word that I have coined. So,
yeah, the one thing against is the right wing is attacking her on that, but anything Trump says or does, they have no trouble with. That's what gets me. It makes no sense. You know, it's a double standard. It's hypocrisy.
Yeah, well, that's part of politics, is being a hypocrite, as I say. So we're speaking with
not a rhino quit, a hypocrite, right?
Exactly.
Making fun of the word hippo and rhino. Well, rhino is Republican in name only. So that's a different thing. I guess a rhino crit is someone who criticizes Trump. Could be called a rhino crip.
Yeah, I guess we could possibly look at Mitt Romney, who's been accused of being a rhino. But we've got so many things to talk about on this show. We're not
a rhino crip, we could call him.
We're not going to a rhino Mitt, maybe, but we're not gonna a Romney the rhino. That's kind of cute. We're not gonna really have enough time for that.
I give him credit, though, for having voted to convict Trump on one of the two counts. I do give Romney credit. And I'm not a big fan of Romney, but I think he was right on that. And Susan Collins really annoyed me when she said, I think he's learned, and said the ED. So, and I said, what the hell are you doing? Learned. And then she admitted he hasn't. But I think that's going to haunt her in the election for her in Maine. That is going to repeat that learned. Like, who says learned that way? It's just really strange. Here she is, a strange character. I've come to the conviction. And I think it's disgraceful the way she acted on Kavanaugh and now on Trump.
Well, there's certainly a cast of characters, ain't there?
Yes.
And again, another one of my words or phrases that I've coined. Since Pete Buttigieg is no longer the mayor of South Bend, I have to modify that name, and so I'm now going to anoint him possible President Pete. Sounds kind of cool, too. Lots of P's. So we'll refer to Pete Buttigieg.
If he wins, we'll say the Petification of America. How's that for a word?
possibly. So possible President Pete, will, or presidential possibility Pete, rearrangement of the word, so we'll use that also. Again, I thankfully had a copy of that list, which I pelosified, that is, tore up, of all the topics we'll talk about, because we would need 3 hours to go through all of them. Let's
go about your girlfriend Melania that you love so much that I don't.
Well, my opinion of Melania has dipped a bit since we last talked, and we'll get to that. But let's go to a more serious and sad note. We lost several celebrities, one in particular, a personal favorite of mine, over the last few days. The personal favorite is Orson Bean. Orson Bean was on with Scott, the interviewer to the stars, many times. Great interviewee, very funny guy, and he died due to an accident. He was run over by a careless driver, whom I hope that they penalize very strictly, as vehicular homicide is very serious. And Orson Bean, one of the great ones, I don't know what else to say, hilarious as a game show panelist, one of your consummate Once My Line and other celebrity game shows. He was insightful, very smart. I mean, almost like Betty White in some ways. He's so versatile in the things that he could do. So gracious when he talked to Scott. So funny. Really, really miss the guy. And a good name, too. Love the name Orson Bean. So miss that guy already. Very sad. Especially when someone
91
does.
91 years old, hit by 2 cars yet. Not one. Can you believe that? In Los Angeles, crossing the street.
Be careful out there, folks. Don't text and drive. Don't drink and drive. It's stupid. It's about the best I can say. I don't know the entire circumstances, but I hope the law.
I see 2 cars, and maybe because one car ran into the other because of the accident.
Yeah, well, I hope
but
that.
Also, I think it should be pointed out, Orson Bean, as great as he is, and you can't hold a person responsible for his son-in-law. His son-in-law was the late right-wing columnist Andrew Breitbart, who was a really despicable character. So, of course, that's not his fault, but I'm just saying his son-in-law is not someone to admire. He died 10 years ago at age 43.
But whatever the circumstances are, I don't think we know them currently. I hope that, especially if it involves distracted or driving or drinking and driving or usage of other drugs and driving, that the law comes down hard on these people. Orson Bean, great talent, and I'm saddened. Invite listeners to go to the
91. What a way to die, hit by a car at 91. That's terrible.
Go to our show archives, and you can hear Scott talk to Orson. It's well worth your time, believe me. The great Kirk Douglas, over 100 years old, father of
103 plus, yes.
Father of Michael Douglas. Very sad. He lived a full life. I mean, one of the original Hollywood leading men, a great man as well as a great actor, and again, his son also a great actor, Michael Douglas. So saddened by that. And recently,
Michael Douglas is 75 now. Wow.
Robert Conrad, another great actor. Sometimes things come in threes like this, and it is very sad.
And I should also point out someone, I don't know if you know, Roger Kahn, who wrote about the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Boys of Summer.
Yeah,
yes.
Boys of Summer. He also passed away, yes.
Yeah.
He was also, I think, 90 years old. So at least one thing, they all lived long lives. That's a nice thing about it.
Yeah, very sad, and some very talented people that have really shaped pop culture in this country. And we look at their great legacy. And
yeah, by the way, Trump had Kirk Douglas, 103. There's still a well-known, in this case, actress who's older than him and still very outspoken. And that's Olivia de Havilland, is older than him. She's 103 plus, but she's like 5 months older than Kirk Douglas. So she's nearing 104. Isn't that amazing?
And, of course, John McCain's mother, who's 172 years old, I believe. She's still with us. How old is she? She's about 110, isn't she? She's quite
107.
107. That sounds like a radio station. Well, it is a radio station. We're 107.1. So, Mrs. McCain, if you're listening, thank you for bringing into this country a hero, your late son, John, and 107 more years.
Oh, by the way, I just looked Roberta McCain up. On February 7th, she had 108. She's 108 now, February 7th, 1912.
Wow.
Imagine that. Roberta McCain, John McCain's mother, is 108.
Well,
earlier this month,
she celebrated number 108. That's quite good. And we admire someone who can live that long. And again, your wonderful son, the late, great John McCain, almost became president, a war hero, a fine American, and a very moderate Republican. So even if you don't agree with him on all of his views, as Ron and I would attest, you have to admire the guy. And his mom?
Yeah, it says here that she's doing great, and she says her long life is due to her sense of humor.
Well, if sense of humor causes someone to have a long life, I think I'll be around for a long, long, long time.
Yes. And honestly, as far as a public figure being 108, the only one I can think of is the environmentalist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who hit 108. And, of course, unfortunately, her name is now connected to that terrible shooting in Parkland, Florida, at the school named after her. But she was a great environmentalist, and she lived to be 108, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
So we celebrate the legacy of some recent celebrities and great Americans who have passed on, and we admire the now 108-year-old mother of the late, great politician,
John McCain. February 7th, 1912.
Maybe she should run for president. She certainly has seen quite a lot.
Apparently she has a good sense of humor. She gets over that Trump has attacked her son so often, even when he was gone already, when he was dead. So she does have a good sense of humor. I guess she doesn't let it, you know, get her upset, you know. But of course, women do live longer than men generally. So, you know, that's the one thing about. But still, I don't think there's anybody else publicly in the United States history that's older than 108 as she, and in the case of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. If she makes 109, I bet it'll be, for a public figure, a record breaker.
We're speaking with Dr. Ron Feinman on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. So, Ron, last week was the big event, the SOTU, as they call it. Everything's got an acronym now. The State of the Union, of course, presided over by our president, Donald John Trump. We talked about the famous, infamous, and always controversial Pelosification, that I've called it, Nancy Pelosi ripping up her copy of the speech. Now, during the speech, Ron, Donald Trump saluted some great Americans, some veterans, and there were
A 100-year-old veteran named McGee, who was a Tuskegee Airman, and he was in the galleries, and he saluted him. But he should have gotten a presidential award, not Rush Limbaugh, who was promoted hatred and division. That's what upset me. And then, of course, Trump had his wife give it to him. I've never heard of a first lady giving any honor to to someone that the president usually does himself. I thought that was overly dramatic and I think improper. But that did happen. But this guy McGee should have gotten that. The 100-year-old, African American airman that was in, you know, part of the World War II fighting force.
It was a touching moment where a husband surprisingly rejoined his wife and his son. I think he had two sons.
Yes.
During the speech. So some great tributes to our servicemen and servicewomen. And then we have the controversial awarding of the medal to one Rush Limbaugh. Now, Rush Limbaugh is a divisive person, very conservative commentator, radio and broadcasting person. You know, as a broadcaster, Ron, I admire all broadcasters, even if I don't agree with their views or don't like them or whatever my complaint would be. We talked about Don Imus and wasn't a fan. Really, yeah. Didn't like his presentation in general, but he did do a lot for broadcasting, for not taking yourself or the world too seriously. And we mourn his passing, regardless of whether or not we personally were fans. But now we have Rush Limbaugh. Conservative views aside,
he's not that old. You know,
he says
he's got terminal lung cancer, fourth stage, so I don't think he has too long to go.
He has said and continues to say many things that are blatantly racist and sexist and demeaning, derogatory to other minorities. Now, sometimes they're funny.
They're funny in that
Archie Bunker kind of a way, but many times they're seriously damaging and don't really bode well, honestly, for the entire broadcasting industry. Opinion is one thing. Joking is one thing. I joke around all the time. I don't take anything, including myself, too seriously. But Limbaugh does go over that barrier. And I think Ron and I can agree 100% on that. In addition, I do believe that there are some broadcasters who would be deserving of a presidential medal. Walter Cronkite would be an example of someone. I don't think Dan Rather would because he's too controversial, he's too liberal, and he's too divisive. But Cronkite was more mainstream, and I think he's someone, even if it were to be given posthumously, Cronkite would be someone who I think deserves a medal of this kind, as he has had revolutionized, and his legacy still revolutionizes the entire broadcasting industry, which we're certainly a part of here at the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. In terms of Limbaugh,
I could nominate Ted Koppel, formerly of ABC News, as someone who I think would deserve a medal. He's going to be 80 years old now, and so is Tom Brokaw, just became 80.
I have no problem with Ted Koppel, Tom Brokaw, or the late Peter Jennings as someone who I think would deserve the honor. The thing with Limbaugh is, although, again, he's an articulate speaker, his opinions, again, don't have to like him. It's free speech, and I admire anybody's right to free speech. They're just too extreme, and they're too offensive that he deserves airtime. If you don't like him, you don't have to listen. If the advertisers don't pay for supporting his program, then he would be out of a job, and that obviously hasn't happened, and doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. But awarding him a presidential medal is uncalled for. He just doesn't deserve it, and the broadcasters that do have to be the elite and the ones that are not controversial. For example, I just mentioned Dan Rather. I'm a great fan of his.
He's 88 years old, by the way. He looks great.
As an articulate commentator who's...
But he's been in confrontation with H.W. Bush and with many others. So it's not that he's a hate or type, but he is, I think, overly controversial. Where I guess a Democratic president could give him a presidential medal of freedom, but it wouldn't be a Republican president.
Again, as a longtime 60 Minutes commentator, panelist, reporter, obviously host of the evening news, he's spoken in the Columbus area. He spoke at the Worthington Library. We talked about that on a past show. He is too controversial.
Have you ever been on WWGH, actually?
He's not been, but, you know, Scott Spears may have him in the works. You never quite know. But bottom line is he is too controversial. And I don't think that Dan Rather would deserve an award. The aforementioned people, Ted Koppel, Peter Jennings, posthumously Walter Cronkite, they would be, I believe, more deserving. So even if I were to agree with Limbaugh's views, I think he's too controversial to deserve that award. It really isn't what the award is designed for. And I would put that down as one of Donald Trump's poorest moments in his presidency. And I think it will hurt him.
His wife, it was weird. That's never happened.
Moderates like myself that might find themselves supporting him if the Democratic nominee is someone that they don't like, Sanders or Warren, for example, kind of have to think twice, pulling the lever for somebody who would give Limbaugh a presidential award. It certainly caused me to rethink some of my decisions, but I've also strengthened my views against candidates like Warren and Sanders. So once again, I'm likely to go to the polls and pull the lever for the person whom I find least objectionable. So let's now switch.
I just got the ballot for the Florida primary, which is March 17th. I'm doing a mail-in, and I'm going to be voting for Pete Buttigieg, who I endorsed on my Progressive Professor. He's my choice for the nomination at this point.
So let's switch gears a bit. No secret that I am a bit of an admirer of Melania Trump. I admire her beauty, her poise, the fact that her job as first lady and as mother of a young son is not easy. But my opinion of her has dropped. It's unfortunate because I really did like her, and I defend her to people like Ron. She had no business giving that award to Rush Limbaugh.
Correct.
Donald should have given it himself. Now, I think the idea, okay, first ladies have gained clout and gained importance of late, so maybe that would be a nice thing for a first lady to do. But I don't think that having Melania give an award to someone who is obviously sexist and racist and objectionable in other ways was a very cool thing to do, especially the sexist part. I mean, there's the irony. You have a first lady doing something which is kind of a presidential job, giving an award to someone who is obviously sexist. I don't really understand the scope of that. It almost seems like Melania was afraid of her husband Donald, and when he says jump, she says how high. Now, in the past, that might have been something which would be considered regular protocol. But as Ron and I have talked about, of late, there have been multiple first ladies who are not afraid to say, even if it's a controversial issue like abortion, that they do not agree with their husband. Now, we have the infamous discussions between Michelle and Barack Obama about Michelle telling Barack to stop smoking if he becomes the president. I don't think he quit smoking. I really don't care if he smokes. As I said, president's a stressful job. If I was president, I would smoke too. So I could care the less if he smoked. But it was kind of interesting that she kind of made that demand. So she kind of came across as that strong-willed woman. Between that and her muscular arms, she's been the butt of a few jokes, but it's all in good fun. Previous first ladies, in the more serious note, specifically Barbara Bush, Laura Bush, and one of our favorites, Betty Ford, their views on abortion were not the same as their husband's views on abortion, and they were not afraid to spew forth said opinions. And I would say that spewing forth an opinion on something as controversial as abortion is a stronger viewpoint, a stronger statement than Melania telling Donald, I'm not going to give Rush Limbaugh this award. You do it or find someone else to do it. She didn't even have to say, I don't want him to get it because he's a sexist. She could have said, well, I don't really think it's my job. So I really think that Melania should have, as you would say, Ron, shown some cojones and told her husband that she wasn't going to do it.
She does.
She could have taken a cue from Betty Ford, both Mrs. Bushes. And to an extent, strong-willed first ladies like the previous two of the previous three, which would, of course, be Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama. So my respect for her, Ron, you probably would be glad to hear this, has dropped. She's in a difficult place because she...
Like a husband is the worst president in modern history. That's
she wants to feel like she's her husband's biggest supporter. Now, as we know, the first lady and the VP, their main jobs, Ron, are to be the president's biggest cheerleader. But you have to admire first ladies who do not hesitate to spew forth their differing beliefs. And again, Betty Ford probably being the first who did this and did it very publicly, and all the others to some extent, maybe with the exception of Mrs. Carter, have not been afraid to indicate that they may not agree with their husbands on certain actions or certain opinions. So, Melania, if you're listening, grow a pair, as how I see it. You still have time to exonerate yourself with people like me, but I'm really not thrilled that you went ahead and did this. You may want to take a look at Rush Limbaugh's views. Again, many are funny in that Archie Bunker kind of a way. Don't take them too seriously, but many are dangerous and serious. Impressionable people, especially young people, will hear that stuff and think, well, is that really true? Well, folks, it's not. And yes, Rush Limbaugh has the right to free speech, as we all do, but he stepped over the boundary. I don't think he deserves a medal from the president. If a broadcaster gets it, it should be someone who's not as controversial. And we mentioned someone like Peter Jennings or the late Walter Cronkite, for example. And in terms of Rush Limbaugh, his beliefs have gone way over. And I guess we'll just leave it at that. I'm just not really thrilled about...
I must say that he made of Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's, which was a disgraceful thing. And he also was the one that started the idea that Obama was from Kenya and that he was not born in the United States. So he really is despicable. But to go after Parkinson's and Michael J. Fox and the fact that he shakes is just like... Just like Trump, making fun of that reporter for shaking. So, in a way, he's very much like Trump, and I think nobody has any sympathy for him. We're not wishing him harm, but honestly, we're not going to be mourning when he passes because he's a piece of crap, in my opinion. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not a fan. Yeah. Again, I admire all broadcasters to some extent, but there are ones I like more than others, and Rush is certainly near the bottom of that list, and not sure what else to say. Just kind of disgusted at the whole thing. But again, I'm also...
I want to point out Barbara Bush and Nancy Reagan privately disagreed on abortion. They believed in abortion rights, but their husbands backed anti-abortion advocates, and they did not speak up publicly when their husbands were president. They spoke up after, so they kept quiet, but they made it clear to their husbands they did not agree with them, but they didn't make it a controversial public issue during their presidencies.
Yeah. I think in some ways Melania could learn to be more ladylike, more couth. I'm not sure how else to put it. That really wasn't their finest moment. But again, I'm offended by many of the things the Democratic candidates say, even the ones that I have a liking for. So again, I'll be going to the polls and more than likely pulling the lever, or in the case of Ohio voting, pressing on the touch screen for the candidate whom I find to be the least of evils. But that's kind of how it is.
lesser of evils.
Voting.
Yes, I want to point out one other thing that Trump has done recently, making fun of Michael Bloomberg because he's short. And I did not know what Michael Bloomberg's height was. And I assumed, you know, it's not nice to do, but I thought, oh, maybe he's 5'2". Turns out he's 5'8", which is the average age of most American males. I mean, the average is 5'8", 5'9". So why is he calling him short? He's not 5'2". So it's a disgrace that I thought for a while, maybe he really is short. He called him a midget. That isn't nice either to deal that way with short people.
Well, Michael Bloomberg certainly isn't short in the bank account department. Who knows?
No, he isn't.
You know, we have Marco Rubio, little Marco, big ears. That's kind of how I talk about him.
But he's also not that little. He's not 5'2". He's about 5'7". So he's just a little below normal, you know, height that the average person is. I'm 5'7", so I guess I'm considered, you know, but not a midget. I'm shorter, but I'm not a midget, you know. You know. So I mean, for him to make fun of short people and everything else, I mean, he makes fun of everybody, our president, and that is not good, and it's bad for kids, boys and girls, to see that. And by the way, I looked at Marco Rubio's 5'9", actually, so he's not really short. He's just not 6 feet.
But his ears are like, you know, half the size of the rest of his head. He has satellite dishes
so
for ears.
Obama's taller, but he also has big ears.
Yeah, they're not as big as... they're not as big as Rubio's, plus Obama.
Well, because Rubio's shorter than Obama, so yeah. I guess it's more noticeable.
And it's actually fairly common that tall, thin men have big ears. That is kind of common for some weird reason. And Rubio, they just kind of stick out for some reason.
But, what is your height, by the way? I don't even know what your height is.
About 5'10 or 5'11 if I stand up straight.
So you, according to Trump, you're a bit short too, but really that is not short, and anything 5'7", 5'8 is considered the average American. But if you're 5'2", right, yeah, but it's just, I don't know why he made an issue of his height. He called him, you know, short and said he needed to have a stand to stand on. You know, to me it's ridiculous, you know, that he says things and people just let him get away with it. Nobody makes an issue of it. That's in his support. And yet they go after everybody else for everything they say and do. It's just hypocrisy.
Well, not surprisingly, our time is dwindling down, and we've barely scratched the surface. But at least we've covered the things that I alluded to or mentioned at the beginning of the show. This is a fine mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor talking about politics and current events, what I call presidentology, Pelosifications, possible President Pete. And we also have Joe Biden. Seems like he's been forgotten. He was the front runner. He came in fourth or fifth in Iowa.
He looks like he does not do well in South Carolina, and now his lead is smaller. But the thing is, nobody else is liked by African Americans. They're going to have to switch their support. I don't know what's going to happen because they don't care for Bernie. They don't care for Pete. They don't care for Amy. Not big on Elizabeth Warren either, and I don't think too much on Bloomberg. So they're an important part of the Democratic coalition, as I've written about. So. It's a big problem out there about who they're going to pick for, you know, to be the nominee. I also want to give a little time to give credit to, you know, to Doug Jones, the Democratic senator from Alabama, who, you know, voted to convict Trump. But he's the most endangered Democrat in the Senate races coming up. He, you know, he got his reputation from being a profile in courage, and that he pursued the Birmingham bombers back in 1963. Years later, and in 2001, too, the people who blew up that black church in Birmingham that killed four young girls were convicted, and he was the prosecutor. So that's a really wonderful thing. And he has that seat in Alabama. But guess what? He's going to have to face either Jeff Sessions. Can you believe that? Coming back, or else Roy Moore, the one he beat in the last race. Both despicable, but in Alabama, the odds of him winning a full term is very, very low. So he took a gamble in convicting Trump, and I think that might take away his seat, but I think he deserves credit like Mitt Romney does, maybe more than Mitt Romney, actually. Because Mitt Romney is not in danger of losing his seat. He has it to 2024.
So as we head into the home stretch of today's program. Ron, you certainly have spewed forth a few opinions today, and that's good. We like to hear what you have to say. That's what we do here on The Talking Place, is we talk.
Yes, I always have a good time with this show. It's great.
Invite people to...
I guess it's about 150,000th time I've been on,
exactly.
Right?
just about. We invite people to visit Ron's blog, which he publishes daily, theprogressiveprofessor.com, to hear his viewpoints. Here are some presidentological tidbits, and of course, always a surprise or two. We'll close the show with the topic of your blog from last Sunday. As you mentioned, black voters are very important in this country, especially to the Democratic Party. And they don't seem to like anyone other than Mr. Joe Biden. Now, Iowa is 90% plus white. It doesn't reflect the demographics of the United States, and especially of the Democratic Party. So just because Biden didn't do very well there doesn't mean that his campaign is over. Is there a way, Ron, for people we consider to be the front runners, Mr. Buttigieg, Mr. Sanders, and Ms. Warren?
And Klobuchar, too. She's come under fire from African Americans.
What can they do to get more black voters? Why don't black voters like them?
Because there's been issues with the way they've dealt with the race issue in each case. All of them have had issues in the past or lack of sensitivity. But actually, if you look at it, Joe Biden also was very hardline in the 90s, and blacks used to pick on him, but now they see him as the best choice. He still has a chance, but he's got to do well in South Carolina. And, of course, Super Tuesday, March 3rd, will be the crucial one with 14 states. If he doesn't do well on Super Tuesday, I think that's the end for him. That's going to be the turning point for a lot of these candidates. And right now, it looks like I think Bernie and Pete will survive, and maybe one of the others, maybe Amy, but it depends. You know, it's very hard to figure out. Maybe Bloomberg will be the third choice. So again, we may end up with two Jews and a gay man as the final choices. But of course, very different. One who, you know, both two of them very old, one very young, and one very rich, and one trying to take away from the wealthy, meaning Bernie, and then Pete in the middle. So I don't know. I think Pete has a real good chance.
Bottom line is, Ron, it will be an interesting few days. It gets interestinger every time we talk. New Hampshire coming up, Super Tuesday on the way, Florida primary on the way.
March 17th.
Already have been a few surprises, and I think the surprises are, at this point, only tipping the iceberg. It'll get
in the case of Florida and a few other states, March 17th is St. Patrick's Day, too.
And we shall see. I do see Buttigieg as one of those dark horses who might surprise. I just don't see him beating Donald Trump. I don't think anybody other than Biden or Klobuchar could beat Trump. So as I see it, between the fact that Buttigieg might very well get the nomination, he can just kind of sneak in. The economy is very good right now, and it's getting better. Donald Trump's creative, unusual, but arguably very successful foreign policy decisions, those make him look good. Of course, his getting impeached but still sitting at the Oval Office, that makes him look good. So I see it, Ron, the election is all but over, but maybe I'll be wrong.
I don't think so, but my God, if it is, the country's in trouble with the Constitution, because he'll be out of total control. He's already, he fired Vindman and also Sondland this past week, and that was wrong, and the way he did it was wrong. And yet, you know, people like Susan Collins said he's learned. And that makes me want to smack her, I swear, when I heard her say that. And they keep on showing that video of her saying that. Why does she emphasize the word learned with the ED? I don't know why. But I don't think it helps her. And I think a lot of seats are going to be lost by the Republicans in the Senate. I really think the Democrats will take it over. We'll have to see. But, you know, it's a very bad situation right now because NATO is in disarray, and I still think there's going to be danger of war with North Korea or Iran, and I think as far as economics, it may last now, but eventually the up has to come down, and the second term, if it's Trump, it's going to end up being, well, why would he do anything to deal with the depression if it comes? Because he will have won re-election. That's the problem. He'll probably have a devastating depression, and there'll be nothing we can do, to deal with the problem unless he's willing to do something, and he seems to not care about anything but himself.
And we thank again Dr. Ron Fineman, who's not afraid to spew forth his opinions and his erudite nature and knowledge of the presidency and U.S. politics in general. Thank you again, Ron, for being with us on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio, where we are never at a loss of words to come from our mouths. I can assure
Thanks
you that
again.
Next time Ron and I talk, will be another fine program of outstanding, outstanding, diverse opinions, and just to make it fun, as much controversy as possible. We invite listeners to also listen to Blog Talk Radio. Ron was on this past Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern with Gwen, Jack, and Wayne as they talked progressive politics. Always a good
show.
And quite a bit of controversy there because, as I've said, Gwen Holdolin Berry makes Ron sound like Mike Pence or another conservative.
Oh, my God. No, I don't think so.
But you would agree she is to your left. You would agree to that.
To the left of me, yes. And I think Wayne is, Jack, I think they all are a bit to the left of me. Not much, but a little bit, yeah.
In discussions with Gwen, called her one of those snowflake liberals. And you know what? I don't think she's offended by that because she is. That's fine. She's an intelligent woman. We don't have to agree.
There are no snowflakes here.
We don't have to agree. We can shake hands and still be friends and admire the fact that in this great country, freedom of speech is one of our founding principles.
Yes.
Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, thanking you once again for listening. Be sure to bookmark Ron's blog website, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and send me an email, complaints, questions, suggestions, feedback, thumbs up, thumbs down, laughs, always appreciated, Adam at WWGH1071.com.